Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, The Process of Creation, Text 5. So I'll just read the verse myself. Rajo Vacha Samichinam Vacho Brahman Sarvajnasya Tavanaka Tamo Vishiryate Mahyam Hareh Kathayatah Katham. Raja Uvacha, the king said, Samichinam, perfectly right, Vachaha, speeches, Brahman, O learned Brahmana, Sarvajnasya, one who knows all, Tava, pure, Anagha, without any contamination, Tamaha, the darkness of ignorance, Vishiryate, gradually disappearing, Mahyam, unto me, Harehe, of the Lord, Kathayataha, as you are speaking, Katham, topics, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Maharaj Parikshit said, O learned Brahmana, you know everything because you are without material contamination. Therefore, whatever you have spoken to me appears perfectly right. Your speeches are gradually destroying the darkness of my ignorance, for you are narrating the topics of the Lord. Purport. The practical experience of Maharaj Parikshit is disclosed herein, revealing that transcendental topics of the Lord act like injections when received by the sincere devotee from a person who is perfectly uncontaminated by material tinges. In other words, reception of the messages of Srimad Bhagavatam from professional men heard by a Karmakandiya audience never acts miraculously as stated here. Devotional hearing of the messages of the Lord is not like hearing ordinary topics. Therefore, the action will be felt by the sincere hearer by experience of the gradual disappearance of ignorance. Yasya deve para bhakti, yatha deve tatha guru, tasyaite kathita hyarthaha, prakashante mahatmanaha. Shvetashvatar Upanishad 6.23. When a hungry man is given food to eat, he feels satiation of hunger and the pleasure of dining simultaneously. Thus, he does not have to ask whether he has actually been fed or not. The crucial test of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is that one should get positive enlightenment by such an act. Om Ajnana Tirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunnilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadam Mahyam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakratam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhavitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Vidinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evuja Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So very happy to be here in this small but beautiful temple. Very peaceful and just the right place for sitting and hearing about Krishna. Our whole life should pass by like this, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Maharaj Parikshit is very fortunate. He is doubly fortunate. Number one, he has access to the perfect speaker, Shukadev Goswami. And even more importantly, he has a qualification to be the perfect listener, the hearer. It's not good enough to just have a perfect speaker if the listener is not eager to hear. On the other hand, if the listener is eager to hear and the speaker is not qualified, then also what's the point? It is explained that there are two types of compatible combinations and two types of incompatible combinations of listeners and speakers. Do you understand incompatible? Mm-hmm. Incompatible combinations. The first two types of incompatible combinations of speakers and listeners are, number one, when the speaker is materialistic and is looking at the Bhagavatam and religion in general as a vehicle for material enjoyment and progress. So the speaker is materialistic, but the audience is sincerely spiritual. So the speaker is inducing them to enjoy a material life, and the listeners don't want that, they want something higher, so they get frustrated. And the speaker is also frustrated, thinking these people are just not reciprocating. On the other hand, if the speaker is genuinely spiritual and wants everybody to come to the spiritual platform, and the listeners are materialistic, and they think the speaker should tell us something by which we can make material advancement. It's fine to have some religion and spirituality and all that, but at the end of the day, we need some material enjoyment, we need material progress. And the speaker is not telling us anything about this. He's just speaking high philosophy and so on and so forth. But then they also get frustrated. The speaker is also frustrated. These people are just not interested in real spiritual life. So these are the two types of incompatible combinations. Either when the speaker is materialistic and the audience not so, or when the speaker is spiritual and the audience is not so. And then conversely, the two types of compatible combinations. One, when the speaker is materialistic and
the audience is
also materialistic. Yeah, so they two have a good time. Because the audience gets what it wants. It wants some guidance and sense gratification, it wants some pious entertainment, something to help them make advancement in this world. And the speaker gets some nice donations and he gets some nice fame and name, and so he's happy. So he gets what he wants, the audience gets what they want. So they go along nicely, they're both apparently happy. Obviously, they're not really happy, because you can be actually happy only when you're Krishna conscious. So which brings us to the fourth category of hearers and listeners, of speakers and hearers. And that's the perfect compatible combination. And that is when the speaker is perfectly spiritual or aspiring to be, and the listeners are also perfectly spiritual or aspiring to be. So this is the perfect combination of the speaker and the hearer. So you know, one of the early books published by the BBT was Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. There was one Peace Corps worker from America who came to India and met Prabhupada. I think he's Brahmananda. Yes? Not Brahmananda. He was, anyway. Brahma Muhurta, something. Bob Cohen, and then later he got initiated or something. So he asked questions. Now he was a newcomer. It's not that he was realized, but because he was sincere, he was sincerely seeking. He was a perfect student. He wasn't challenging, he wasn't arrogant, he wasn't asking absurd questions. He was asking with the faith that here, this person in front of me is a realized soul and he can answer my questions. So submissively, with faith, he asked questions. And he was fortunate that he had the perfect speaker with him, and that was Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada answered everything very clearly, comprehensively, concisely, and satisfied all the doubts that this young gentleman had. So that was a perfect combination. So Prabhupada one time also mentioned in the comments, perfect questions, perfect answers. And the whole book was then, the whole conversation was published by the BBT then as a book called Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. It's no good having perfect questions and not having perfect answers. Also, it's no good if a person has the perfect answers but you don't ask the perfect questions. If you go to someone like Prabhupada and ask him, tell me how can I make material advancement? That's not the perfect question. He has the perfect answers provided you have the perfect questions. So in as much as it is important to have the perfect answers in life, it's also important to have the perfect questions. We should know what to ask. If we don't know what to ask, we'll hear the wrong things. Therefore, one has to, as the Srimad Bhagavatam says, approach a spiritual, bona fide spiritual master. Tasmat gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttamam shabde parecha nishnatam brahmanya pashamashrayam. Tasmat, therefore, in connection with what was stated earlier, therefore one must approach a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him. Prapadyeta indicates surrender. One must take shelter of such a bona fide spiritual master. And what does it mean to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master? Jigyasu, he must be inquisitive. Inquisitive about what? About material progress? No. Shreya, uttamam. Uttamam means the topmost or the best. Shreya means our ultimate welfare. There are two words in Sanskrit. One is called prayas, the other is called shreyas. Prayas indicates our immediate benefit, which is generally short-term and material. Immediate enjoyment, the worldly pleasures which give us immediate gratification but which have very terrible consequences later on, are obviously in the category of prayas. They only are immediately beneficial. Actually, they're not, but they seem so. So something that appears to give us benefits very quickly and which has tangible benefits that we can seem to relate to, that is prayas. But that which is a benefit that comes in the long run and which is truly long-lasting is called shreyas. We can have this understanding even somewhat somewhat imperfectly, but we get an idea when we look at the example of, let's say, a student. A student who's studying at university has to study very hard for many years to get a good degree, because a student then wants to go ahead and get a good job outside that pays well. Now, studying at the university, going to all the classes and studying the books for hours and hours together for years, is an austerity. It's not an easy thing to do. And probably the student has many other things in mind. The student would rather be going for some party with his friends or some movie or whatever it is that they do nowadays, party. Last night there was a big rock concert near the open ground, and they were going bang, 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 bang. So there were a whole lot of young people there. Fortunately, they stopped early. They didn't go beyond, I think, 10:30 or something like that. because it's really loud driven. Boom, 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 you know. So that's, so they like to go to these places. And it seems it's right behind, I think, somewhere nearby at least. So the garden. So you got an idea what it is that these people, they like to do, and they think, yeah, this is what. And we saw those queues, didn't we?
Yeah.
To get the tickets as we were going. So let's say there was a student who had an exam on Monday. That's tomorrow. It's a really important exam and he needs to study very hard. So he might be feeling, oh, I want to go to that concert with my friends. But I, you know, oh, I've got this exam on Monday, and if I really don't study, then I lose a valuable few hours, I can't afford to go. So even though he really wants to go for the exam, but he forces himself, no. If I fail this exam, I ruin my future. My career will be spoiled. So I'll stay here, I'll study this paper, and then when I'm through the good degree, I'll get a good job, lots of money, then I can go to lots of rock concerts. Yes. So that's a material equivalent, a very vague example of an insufficient but a somewhat indicative example of Shreyas. That you sacrifice something for the moment. So the rock concert is prayers, yes. And getting the a good degree and a good job in the future, lots of money in the future is Shreyas. So Shreyas essentially indicates a long-term benefit. Prayas indicates an immediate benefit. Now this is a material example. But in this verse that I quoted from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Jigyasu Shreya Uttamam, the word Uttamam qualifies that Shreyas as being the ultimate benefit, the ultimate long-term welfare. The word Uttama is something we've commonly heard of in Krishna consciousness, right? Do you remember where you heard the word Uttama?
Uttama Shloka.
Uttama Shloka. What is that?
It's a name for Krishna.
It's a name for Krishna. And why so?
Because it comes in sound vibration, it's the topmost sound.
Sorry?
It comes in the form of the sound of Srimad Bhagavatam, so it's the topmost sound and glorification of Krishna.
That's right. Topmost sound, the glorification of Krishna, that's right. Shloka means, as you know, the verse, or poetry, or composition. Uttama means the best. So he who is glorified by the choicest of poetry is Krishna, Uttama Shloka. Now the word Uttama has two parts, Ut and Tama. What does Tama mean? Ignorance, tamas, sattva, rajas, tamas. Goodness, passion, ignorance. So sattva gun, raja gun, tama gun. The mode of goodness, the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. So tama means darkness, ignorance. Uttama means that which goes beyond darkness or ignorance. So uttama shloka also means he who takes one beyond darkness or ignorance. Or those shlokas, or those verses, or those compositions that take us beyond ignorance and darkness. Ultimately it refers to something spiritual. Because only that which is spiritual can take us beyond material ignorance and darkness. So Jigyasu Shreya Uttamam means that when one approaches a bona fide spiritual master, one should ask questions, or one should be inquisitive about matters spiritual. Matters spiritual. Spiritual matters. Not matter, but spirit. But spiritual matters. So, because this is the one that is our genuine, this is for our genuine long-term welfare. And for that, achieving that end, we have to compromise on the prayers. Which means we have to take on some austerity, some difficulty. You know, we rise early in the morning, chant our rounds, go to the temple. We'd rather be doing something else. But with our spiritual intelligence, we convince ourselves that now this is what we have to be doing for our larger spiritual benefit. So this is called Jigyasu Shreya Uttamam. So as this is the qualification of the perfect hearer, So the perfect hearer is one who is eager to listen. That's the most important qualification by far. Because the speaker is not interested in listening, there's not much you can do. As they say, you can take a horse to the water, but you can't make him drink. You can't force someone to listen. It has to come voluntarily. That interest, that eagerness. So one of the qualifications of an advanced devotee is that he or she is very eager to listen. The eagerness to hear spiritual topics is the hallmark of an advanced devotee, or at least of someone who potentially is an advanced devotee, a sincere devotee. When Srila Prabhupada accompanied Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and other devotees on a tour of Braj, and they were at Radha Kund for many days, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta spoke just the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam for days on end. And the other devotees were keen on going on parikramas, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was just giving lectures. And Prabhupada, who was at that time known as Abhay Charan, he preferred to stay and hear the lectures rather than go on the parikramas. Although we're not saying that we shouldn't go on the parikramas, we should. But we should go to the parikramas and hear. And here was a case where a realized soul like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was sitting and giving classes, and some of his disciples were going away to just see the places, whereas Prabhupada was sitting to hear. And then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta noted, this boy likes to hear. And he gave him his certificate. Not literally, but in terms of his appreciation, and indicated that he would go very far in spiritual life. Why? Because he liked to hear. That's something really significant. If somebody likes to hear about Krishna and about Krishna consciousness, you can be sure he or she is a right candidate for spiritual advancement. So that's one qualification of the listener or the hearer. And also in the Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, Krishna speaks about the need for approaching a spiritual master. Tad viddhi pradipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshyanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshanaha. So it's tad viddhi, if you want to know that. Know that, know what? What is referred to in the previous verses to that? That is spiritual understanding. If you want to develop that spiritual understanding, then pranipatena, then you have to go again and surrender to a bona fide spiritual master. And what do? Pariprashnena, then you have to ask questions. So that's the second qualification of an aspiring disciple or an aspiring devotee. That one must ask questions. Those questions must be asked, and Prabhupada says in the purport there, one should not have, he said, blind faith and absurd inquiries both are condemned. Yes, that's important. We shouldn't just lap up anything anybody says. We should be discriminating. It should be according to the Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And yet, we shouldn't be unnecessarily challenging and skeptical and so on. So, pariprashnena indicates a humble mood of service, hearing or question. The third qualification is sevaya. One must be willing to serve the bona fide spiritual master. If the hearing process is devoid of a mood of service, if it's devoid of a humble service attitude, then also it will not yield perfection very quickly. So these are three very important qualifications for the listener. So what are the three? Number one, eagerness to hear. Number two,
asking questions.
Of course, one It's not compulsory. Sometimes devotees get worried, you know, I don't have any questions to ask my bad devotee. No, you're not. I mean, just if you have questions, if you have doubts, you can feel free to ask. You're not compelled, it's not that you're forced to. If you don't ask questions, you're not a good devotee or something like that. But if they do arise in your heart, by all means, ask them. But when you ask them, make sure they're not absurd inquiries, they're not challenging just for the sake of finding fault or something like that. So that's the second, asking questions. And the third, a mode of service, a humble service attitude. So these are the three main qualifications for a perfect listener and a perfect disciple. Generally, the controversies are usually centered around the qualifications of a guru. That's right. That's an important question, undoubtedly. How does one understand who is a bona fide spiritual master? And despite the fact that it's one of the most important questions you can ask in life, what are the qualifications of the guru, it's also equally important to ask what?
Qualifications of a disciple.
That's right. Only then you can have a perfect combination, a compatible combination. You have a perfect guru and you have a disciple who is not up to the mark, what's the point? Or if you have a sincere, aspiring disciple and the guru is not bona fide, then what's the point? So both must be compatible and perfect. So therefore these are the qualifications of the disciple. Then what about the qualifications of the guru? So in the first verse that I quoted from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as in the verse from the Bhagavad Gita, the qualifications of the guru are also given. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it says, Shabde parecha nishnatam brahmanya upashamashriya. Shabde. There's shabda. Shabda means literally word, but it refers to the spiritual word. In the Bible also it says, in the beginning there was the word. Right? The word sound. So we focus a lot on sound vibration, hearing sound vibration. That's really crucial for us. So, Shabde Pare, meaning that this person is well versed in Shabda. So he becomes Shabda. So in other words, the bona fide spiritual master is one who understands the conclusions of the Vedas. Even if he doesn't know all the different branches of the Vedas, the Karmakanda section, this Veda, that Veda, you know, one doesn't have to know all these Vedas, but one has to know the conclusions of the Vedas. Shabde parecha nishnatam brahmanya upashamashrayam. And he is a devotee of the Lord and he has taken complete shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are the qualifications of a bona fide spiritual master. And here also, in the second verse, the Bhagavad Gita verse, Tattva Darshana, one who has realized the truth. Realized the truth meaning that one who is actually acting on the platform of truth. So anyway, these two then constitute the perfect combination. And the question of hearing and asking questions and speaking, of course, is a very essential ingredient in the whole process. The relationship between the guru and the disciple, or between a speaker and the listener, essentially focuses on speaking and hearing, and then on following what one has heard. Because if one is hearing and not following, then the process will be very slow. Of course, the transcendental literature is so powerful that if one simply comes and hears, and even if one doesn't follow anything, but one simply comes and hears, the transcendental sound vibration is so powerful, it will act. If one's attitude is right, if one is eagerly listening, it will purify. Even if one is doing nothing else but just hearing with the proper attitude. But then here's the catch. If one really has the proper attitude, then one will follow. So one would do what's explained in the course of the talk or from the scripture. So Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadev Goswami constitute the perfect compatible combination. The perfect listener, the perfect speaker. And Srila Prabhupada makes an interesting opening to his purport here. Quote, "The practical experience of Maharaj Parikshit is disclosed herein, revealing that transcendental topics of the Lord act like injections when received by the sincere devotee from a person who is perfectly uncontaminated by material tinges." Injections.
Yes,
that's interesting. But these injections are received not through the veins or through the muscles. Anyone with a medical background here? There are two types of injections. One is called an intravenous injection and an intramuscular injection. Sometimes you inject, for things that are not so serious, you could inject it into the muscles. But sometimes you have to inject it into the veins because it has to go onto the bloodstream directly. So, you know, nobody likes to get injections, yes? It's painful, you have to get the whole needle into your system. But this injection is very pleasant. It's very charming. And that injection is received through the ears. It's sound vibration, not some chemical that goes in. And this injection has to be taken, you have to really take not just 5 ml or whatever it is, the dose that they give in the normal injections. Shravana Puteshu Sambhritam, the Bhagavatam says, that you know the whole of the hole in the head, which is called the ear, that must be filled with Krishna Katha, filled with talks about Krishna. That injection must be really heavy dose, you know. Upon every day you must have that injection. Some people who are addicted to different kinds of substances which are not good for oneself, all forms of drugs and so on. So if they don't keep themselves injected every day, then they get all sorts of symptoms, yes? They call it withdrawal symptoms. They go through terrible agony because they've got addicted to that substance. And now when they don't have it, they're in such tremendous pain. They'll do anything to get that injection again. The same, that should be our condition with respect to Srimad Bhagavatam. We should be addicted like that. When I don't get my next injection, when am I going to hear again? When am I going to hear again? When will I get time to sit down and read and study and chant and so on? One time I met one devotee and he told me something which I was very happy to hear. He said, "You know, I am addicted to Srimad Bhagavatam." I said, "Such a nice use of the word addicted." Normally when you hear addicted, you hear with respect to all sorts of unpleasant things. But here is something that's a positive addiction. We should be addicted to Krishna. We should be addicted to Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. It is devotional service. And that's the perfection of our life. But we should not be addicted to speaking longer than is necessary. So I will end the talk because it's 8:30 now. But the conclusion is that hearing is the most important process for us. It is the essence of our whole process. And one who actually does so from the right sources in the disciplic succession will be successful in destroying the darkness of ignorance and achieving the perfection of life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes.
You just mentioned hearing from the right sources. I was looking at some, trying to learn some harmonium tunes yesterday. I was just looking at the internet and they were going through some tunes, simple tunes. And there was one tune I started to learn. And then right at the end, the person says, "Ah yes, and this is a Krishna Das melody." So Krishna Das is a bhajan, famous kirtan leader, but he's impersonal. Right? And I'm thinking, do I
Yeah, well, I didn't pursue it any further. I just didn't, you know. And then, and I'm just saying for persons who, how does that act? Because the person is people are attracted to his bad journals. Yeah, he's impersonal. So is that, that will have a negative effect? Is that the correct understanding?
Well, yes. That is what the verses say. Vaishnava mukhodhirnam putam hari kathamritam shravanam naiva kartavyam sarpochishtam yathapayaha. The meaning of this verse is quoted often by Srila Prabhupada. It means a Vaishnava, that means a non-devotee. Mukhodgirnam, that means the words emanating from his mouth. Mukha means mouth, girnam means that which emanates. A Vaishnava mukhodgirnam utam hari kathamritam shravanam naiva kartavya. What? Shravanam means to hear. Na eva means never. Kartavya means should. So you should never hear the words that emanate from the mouth of a non-devotee of the Lord. Even if it is Uttam Hari Katha Amritam. Hari Katha, Krishna Katha. Amrit means nectar. And Uttam means purifying. Generally, Krishna Katha is purifying. That's the nature of the Katha. But if you hear that Katha from the mouth of a non-devotee, which you shouldn't, but what if you do? Then Sarpa Uchishtha Yatha Payaha. Payaha means milk. Sarpa means a snake. Uchishtha means that which is tasted by. It's just like drinking milk which has been touched by the lips of a poisonous serpent. So then the milk becomes poisoned. Generally milk is very nourishing, very nutritious, full of vitamins and proteins and everything we need. It's the perfect food for human beings. But if that milk has been touched by a poisonous serpent, then that milk will have a poisonous effect. Instead of nourishing us, it will kill us probably. So similarly, even though Krishna Katha in and of itself, or Krishna Naam, the holy name of Krishna, is nectar and is purifying, but if it's heard from the mouth of a non-devotee, then it will have a poisonous effect. So we don't hear the discourses and kirtans of those who are not devotees of the Lord. They may be professional reciters, and Prabhupada makes a mention of that here. In other words, the reception of the messages of Srimad Bhagavatam from professional men, heard by a karmakandi audience, never acts miraculously as stated here. So in this line you have that one type of compatible combination. Materialistic speakers, materialistic listeners. But that's not what we want. Compatibility, mere compatibility is not what we want. We want the right kind of compatibility. So therefore, even if it's a kirtaniya who is singing very well, very famous and so on, so we wouldn't hear what he says. On the other hand, if you just want to utilize a melody, and then you sing that melody as a devotee following in a disciplic succession, it's not bad, it's alright. But you just have to be cautious that doesn't lead devotees to actually start looking up other things of that singer, and then they go and have more, then they become his followers or something like that, and they want to hear him regularly. That would not be appropriate. Right?
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. My question will probably show that I'm not addicted to to hearing. A lot of the time when we're explaining Krishna consciousness to people, we refer to the past, you know. For instance, for an example would be referring to the great Rajarshis or referring to great sages in the past and so on. And I haven't come across it yet, but I'm sure it's kind of around the corner that somebody will say, Anna, that's all. Why don't you refer to something in the present? You know, that's something that's either it's mythological or, you know, we don't accept that. You know, it doesn't refer to today. You know, why can't you? You know, all I'd say almost give examples of how things should work without always referring to the past. And I'm kind of aware that we do refer to the Golden Age, the, you know, Satya Yuga, and, you know, that's generally how we present an ideal society to people that they should aspire to. And we tend to do that a lot. And sometimes I feel even ourselves, we think, oh yeah, that ideal society is there, and, you know, and somehow or other we don't kind of produce that ideal society.
Well, actually, the ancient descriptions of the Rajarishis and so on are not mythology. But even if somebody argues like that, in this connection, even if it is mythology, we learn something. We learn the principle of hearing properly. The principles that we just spoke about now, of the perfect combination of a listener and a speaker, what constitutes perfect combination, that principle is still valid. So we learn from these examples of how there was a king who gave up everything. Even assuming it's just a story, there's a lesson to be learned from it. There's a moral of the story. It's something to learn from. And we can adapt it to our modern life. Yeah, even if we are big people in this world, we are Bill Gates or we are whatever we may be, Rockefeller or anything, yeah, we are also going to die one day. So better we should also, you know, take shelter of Krishna and ask questions and hear and approach a bona fide spiritual master. So there are lessons to learn from that, even if we don't accept that it is historical truth. Even if you think it's mythology, well, you learn lessons from it. People like to hear stories. And they like to say lessons which have morals, as, you know, stories which have morals. That's one thing. And second, yes, we can give examples from modern time too. And we do, devotees do that. But generally, we also do it with a combination of phenomena or episodes from tradition, because tradition is very important. It's because of tradition that we have what we have. It's been handed down to us in the disciplic succession, and we recognize the contribution of these great souls like Shukadeva Goswami and King Parikshit. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be sitting here today talking these things. So therefore, an important part of any civilization is to cherish this tradition. If there are wrong things in the tradition, you may give them up. But if those things that are worthy of being cherished, you should cherish. Any country, for example, will cherish the memories of its founding fathers and those who gave up their lives for the independence of the country, and, you know, those who had monumental contributions to the country and so on, right? You have memorials for them, you have memorial days for them. It's natural. So you have... So if you tell people, why talk about the past? Why talk about... Because they contributed so much to the present. Because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be here today. Right? So also the spiritual platform, because these people have contributed immensely to the spiritual tradition, which is why we are benefiting from them. So yes, we also can give modern-day examples, but we shouldn't forget the tradition in the process of trying to just make everything modern. We can be modern, but be firmly rooted. Our feet should be planted in tradition very firmly. You know? So we should be firmly rooted in tradition, and then with our heads, we can try to see how to apply that tradition to modern situations and make it relevant to the people at large. Yes? Yes.
I have a question. After class, they said that you don't make advancement until you approach a spiritual master or you accept a spiritual master. But does that mean that whatever devotional service you're performing, it's not counted? You don't make any advancement? I just want to get proper understanding of this. Because sometimes we have a pressure to initiate it, and we hear, we listen, we don't know how to act or what to do. Should there be any pressure to be initiated?
Yes and no. The pressure is there in the sense that the scripture says, Prabhupada says, one day you should. So you should know it's something you have to do. You have to look and seek for somebody like that. But that's your bounden duty as a human being, as a seeker of the truth. At the same time, it's not a kind of pressure that you have to do it yesterday. Meaning that, you know, you just have to do it just because it has to be done. You have to be comfortable with it. You have to feel inspired. You have to feel connected. It's not a mechanical thing. You have to do it just because you're told to do it, or just because you're supposed to do it. Or you do it just because it's a matter of social prestige within the community of devotees, or because it's uncomfortable when you're asked by devotees, why are you not initiated yet? I don't want to be asked these things, so might as well get initiated. These are not the reasons for getting initiated. Initiation should be, it's necessary, but it's something that should come voluntarily from your heart. It's not something that can be artificially imposed by any institutional norms or by social pressure or anything of the sort. So in that sense, you should not feel the pressure. But the pressure should be there in the sense that you understand it's a spiritual principle that one should do that. Everybody has done it. Krishna did it. Prabhupada did it. All the acharyas did it. Okay? So you can take your time, think about things, and then gradually take the step. For some it may take longer, for some it may take a short time. Doesn't matter. That's the first point. The second point is, that's only about diksha or initiation. But we can continue to take shiksha, which is also very, very important. Shiksha means guidance, knowledge, instruction. So when one first comes to ISKCON, one is introduced to Srila Prabhupada, who is the preeminent shiksha guru for the whole movement. And for those who actually took initiation from him, he's also their diksha guru, or the initiating spiritual master. But for those who came to the movement after his departure, Prabhupada remains the preeminent shiksha guru. So therefore we take shelter of his books, of his teachings, of his lectures, instructions. So therefore you're not deprived of good instruction. You're not deprived of the shelter of a great personality like him. So when one comes to the institution or to the movement, one preliminarily takes shelter of Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, and that remains lifelong. So we continue to take shiksha from Prabhupada. And then as one goes on, and one gets into the process of devotional service, then the initiation process will happen of its own accord. We want to do it, so you should pray to Krishna that he enables you to find out, to come to that point. But you don't have to unnecessarily hurry up and rush into something sentimentally or emotionally or whimsically. Think it through. These are very important decisions in life. Don't hurry through with these things. Take your time, no hurry. Yes? And yes, your third part of your question, that before you get initiation, then whatever devotional service you do, then is it valid or not? Yes, that's your question. What do you feel?
Yes, of course it's valid. Why is it valid? Yes, it's devotional service, and especially because you're doing it under the instruction of a perfect spiritual master like Srila Prabhupada. You're taking shiksha from Prabhupada. Prabhupada says, chant Hare Krishna. You chant it. Prabhupada says, come to the association of devotees. You do it. He says, read Srimad Bhagavatam. You do it. So you are functioning under the authorization of a bona fide spiritual master like Srila Prabhupada. So it's perfectly valid. Number one. Number two. If you want to get initiated, you have to be doing these things at least for a certain period of time before you can be eligible to get initiated. If you're not rendering devotional service, then how will you come to the point when you become eligible to get initiated? So either way, it's important. Let me give an example. Let's say, I don't know if you have the system here, but if you want to enter into medical college after you finish your high school at university, some places you might have to give an entrance examination, right? And so if you pass the entrance examination, then you're given admission. Now that entrance examination may not make you a doctor, but without going through that entrance examination, without studying whatever subjects are there, it may be unconnected, it may be just vocabulary, or it may be, you know, IQ, or you know, whatever it is. But without passing that, you won't get entrance into the college to become a doctor. Or you might even, they might even give you preliminary subjects of some biology or medicine or something. You've got to study that and answer. So you start the subject. But then you enter the medical college, and even then it doesn't stop. It's just beginning. So whatever you did before you entered the medical college is also essential, because if you don't do that, you don't get into the medical college. So entering the medical college is like getting initiation. What you do in terms of the entrance exams in order to get into the medical college is your preparatory period, which is also crucial. If you didn't do that, you wouldn't get into the medical college. In other words, whatever devotional service an uninitiated devotee is doing is important, because without that he or she will not get initiated. But once you're initiated, it's only the beginning. It's not that the goal of life is achieved now that one has got initiated. So initiation means to initiate, to begin. So when a person enters medical school, just begins studies of being a doctor. He's not a doctor yet. The real business begins when he or she graduates as a doctor, then begins treating patients independently. And then after many, many years, he attains perfection. So similarly, as devotees, we get initiated. That's just the beginning. Then the real business starts. Now we're in training. We've been accepted for being training. So we're in trainee devotees yet. We're not devotees really. We're devotees in training, in probation. So we have to be trained. And that takes a lifetime of training. And then by the mercy of the devotees of Krishna, then we may be eligible to enter into Krishna's abode. And Krishna will say, alright, you've successfully passed. Now I'll take you back to my abode. That is the perfection of life. Okay? Alright, so I think we should stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Panchatattva ki jai, Gaur Premanande.